This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Good morning. It seems to be an axe grinding Thursday on the morning show.
Say what you said again.
Terse and truculent.
Terse and truculent.
Terse truculent?
Truck.
Just kind of disagreeable and grouchy, basically.
Truculent.
I'm not grouchy.
I like that.
Do you truculent. Know, I'll be 100% with y'all.
Is there a K in there? Truculent.
Today is the best mood I've been in all week.
I can confirm.
Yeah, no, this is
kick the dog Thursday.
My grandmother had a knack for this. Like she was never in a bad mood per se. She was just 100% honest and curt with you. You know, she wouldn't mince words. Yeah, she didn't mince words.
She was, what was the word you used for yourself the other day? She was real.
That's right.
It was real.
I'm all real.
You were talking about. I told you I had some gears to grind too. I got to tell y'all, man. I read a book to my son last night before bed, I would love to know. And Rob, you're the perfect person to ask this question to. What exact drugs was Dr. Seuss on when he was writing these freaking books, dude? I'm just telling you. I read a book last night to my son called Hop on Pop. And I felt like I was on drugs by the time I got done with it. I texted my wife. I was still in my son's room. And I said, throw this book into the recycle bin because I am never reading this thing again. It was like 100 pages of tongue twisters.
Oh, read your kid Shel Silverstein then.
Dude, I mean, and I have that Where the Sidewalk Ends. I got that one in the repertoire too, man.
Well, it's kind of like that. It's kind of like when you go to I don't want to get down this whole wormhole, but like the founding fathers of our country, and then you look at how they, you know, the things they did and some of the things, and then you look at like money. Like, look at a dollar bill. Like, I know that this is literally on that movie Days Confused, but there's a lot of things going on in a dollar bill. A lot of things.
Oh, the eye above the pyramid?
The eye above the pyramid. Eye, yeah. I mean, that's like, there's you can go down wormholes.
That's Freemasonry.
Yeah, it is, but there's wormholes of what those beliefs are and all kind of, like, what the meanings of some of those. I know you've been down these wormholes, Rob, because I know you've done acid and looked at a dollar bill before. So,
oh, yeah. And most of your dollar bills probably have a little cocaine sediment on them, too.
Oh, yeah.
What are they doing when we go cashless? When we go cashless, how can we do our blow?
Well, that's what's – well, you know what? And guess the other thing. Paper straws don't last as long either. So you're going to – they're getting rid of the plastic straws because of the turtles. –
I just have a little Dan Marino spoon around my neck, then, I guess.
Where are we at?
I don't know. Well, I'm just.
What day is it, Rob?
I just let you lead me.
What day is it? Drive the boat.
That's the blind leading the blind, if I've ever heard it.
What is the fair or foul theme today?
Well, we don't have fair or foul. It's Thursday.
I'm sorry. Thursday. The mic'd up.
Mic'd up is going to be about this UNLV quarterback. With all the craziness going on in that situation. I got some serious thoughts on that about who's right and who's wrong.
Well, there can both be wrong.
Well, we don't have to go into it right now. That's why it's in Mic'd Up later today.
Well, you're just chomping at the bit.
It's
an hour and 40 minutes away or 33 minutes away. I think we can touch on it.
Right, which is the build-up.
I think we can touch on it.
Hour and a half.
I just think that there's certain people in this whole situation that always think they've got it all figured out. And those are the people you should listen to the least. The guy that says, well, all they had to do was this, is always normally wrong because there's never been a simple 100% answer. Even
I've got one for you. Get it in writing. I've always
well, no.
Get it in writing.
Yes. Well, that's of course.
On both sides.
But
yes. Both sides.
But my point is the guy that said, well, if they'd have done this years ago, they could have saved all this. That's never the answer. Those are the people that know the least about college athletics.
I will say this. I think everybody has this guy in their life, right, that sends you the tweet, whatever the tweet is. Quarterback does this. Quarterback quits on team. And somebody will send you the tweet, and just under it will just have one word, like, unbelievable. You know? You're just like, what's the backstory here? I mean, is there an article? Like, do we do any research?
Any
like,
context?
Is it just the tweet? Like, are we just reading that? That's unbelievable? Because I don't think anything in college athletics is unbelievable anymore. It all happens so quick. So, yeah, we'll have that mic'd up as well. I got so many good stats to throw at you today as far as the Falcons and the Saints go, Rob. And then, unfortunately, we are not talking about the Braves and the Mets today because that debacle that Major League Baseball has allowed to happen is just...
Well, didn't the Braves also refuse to have an earlier start?
Both teams did.
The Mets refused to have this game done earlier in the season, from what I understand. And this is also a product, too, Rob, of the fact that they don't play each other as much as they used to, so there's a lot less makeup opportunity.
Right. Well, the game on April 10th probably shouldn't have been rained out. I went to a game earlier this season. Why is this game rained out? I don't get it.
And
it wasn't due to some apocalyptic frontal system coming in. It didn't seem like it. Seemed like they could have waited it out, but they didn't.
We had a couple of those early in the season, yeah, Rob. Yeah. And to your point, it's so frustrating when, you know, you just go ahead and wait it out, just get it in, or figure it out a way. It's bad on all fronts. What this does now, people keep asking me, what are they going to do with the pitching staff? Hell, I don't know. I don't know, but I don't know what they're going to do. They had this lined up perfectly.
Yep.
I don't know who starts Friday. Well, it's Chrisell. I honestly can't tell you. They're like, well, you got to line it up. I go, well, you know, you need these games against the Royals too, right?
You do.
So
everything could be decided by Monday.
That was the other thing. If after the first game on Monday, the playoffs are decided,
then
you're not playing the second game. The biggest thing the Braves have going for them right now is that the Diamondbacks, who did win last night, are now a game ahead of you, a full game. They play the Dodgers this weekend. And the Dodgers, I think it's the Dodgers, they play the Dodgers or the Padres. And the Dodgers and the Padres are in a battle for the NL West. And so that's your biggest thing, is that they might not be resting players. I'm pretty sure it's the Dodgers they play.
Well, hopefully Bryce Elder will pitch on Monday.
Is he still
around?
I'll say this much too.
I can see that happen.
I've had a lot of people, Bo, ask me about the pitching staff in my circles, and hey, you know, who starts here and who starts here. I'll be honest. I think the starting pitcher is actually secondary in the entire equation. Think about the taxing you will put on your bullpen.
Yeah.
If you have to play all these high leverage games this weekend, then a doubleheader Monday,
and then get on a plane to go to LA.
Like, think about what they're going to be asking of Raisel Iglesias over the next week. If all things went according to plan for the Braves,
right,
and you did have to play two games, like, you are taxing the crap out of that bullpen throughout the next week plus, man. That is going to be rough.
That's part of it. The Diamondbacks do play the Padres. Thanks, Dylan. That's good for the Braves that the Padres have a chance to win that division still a little bit. Although I think that could be decided. I think they're two games behind the Dodgers. It is, Mike, but you do get the extra man. I did hear, and we talked about this briefly yesterday, that Renato Lopez threw off a mound earlier in the week. He is eligible to come off today of the IL, whether he will or not. And I also think if you get that deep in it, You haven't used that one, and we'll talk to Grant about it. Ian Anderson still has that. You could call him up. It would use him out, but it would keep you from having to use like that call up. And so basically, an option is going off his career.
Do we know if Ian's on the 40 man?
He is.
Yeah, okay,
but so that you would use that call up, right? That option on him, that one that you have for this season. The reality is you wouldn't have to use a Bryce Elder. But then also, if Rondo Lopez is ready, you just throw him out there and just see what you got. There's no easy answer.
That could turn into a bullpen game since he's been idle and out.
You also have Grant Holmes,
yeah,
who I would trust more than Bryce Elder.
Same. Same. Don't give me any Bryce. I don't want the Bryce Elder.
And I would almost.
That's why I said that. That was satire.
Yeah, yeah, no, I know.
I almost. But it's not out of the realm of possibility. I almost
trust
that. Of course,
you can see it happening.
I almost trust it more, though, than Ronaldo Lopez at this point.
Well. All right. Well, there's a particular game going on Sunday inside Mercedes-Benz. 1 o'clock. The hated rivals coming in. The Falcons licking their wounds from that heartbreaking loss to the Chiefs. We'll get into that next. And what, there were some cuts? Is that what I'm seeing?
No, just sound.
I was about to say, what? Cuts? What are you talking about? That threw me. I go,
also, hey,
we're like 4 weeks in. There's no cuts.
Don't forget, Rob, there's also a Georgia and Alabama game this weekend. You know what I mean?
Oh,
that one might be going on as well.
Well,
so.
We've been getting some college football as well. Yeah, what's that, a 7:30 kick in Tuscaloosa?
Woo!
All that and more next on this cavalcade of whimsy known as the Morning Shift Sports Radio 1990 Game.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Welcome back to the Morning Shift. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm, morganandmorgan.com. Falcons Saints, 1 o'clock on Sunday. We're going to dissect that. And Mike, you said you have some numbers that will blow our collective. Our heads will explode when we hear them.
I've heard his numbers. They're not that good. They're not. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Wow. Just
I've heard his numbers. They're not great. No, it is. I got a
litany, just a whole list of stats that are just head-turning in terms of the Falcons, man.
One of the numbers when he told me, I literally wrote back, here's what I said to him was, what does that even mean? And then I gave a explanation of what I thought it meant. And after you talk about it for a while, I think it meant and it really got me back to what I first thought, which is, it's a good thing, but it's also a terrible thing.
Yeah,
it's also a terrible thing if you don't have consistency. It basically every drive comes down to one down, and it's not the down you think.
Yeah, no, and I think that we'll continue to do that throughout the show. I got so many stats coming out my ears over here, Rob. We could probably drop a couple big stats every segment, and I wouldn't run out by the end of the show, man. So it's gonna be a good one, man. I am shocked. I don't know if you guys are. I don't. Shock's a word. I'm a little bit surprised, Rob, that the Falcons come out in Vegas as a 1.5-point favorite in this game. I was a little bit taken aback by that. I thought that, and I think it goes back to Eric McCoy being hurt for the Saints and some of the other worries they have with Alvin Kamara and everything else.
But he didn't practice yesterday with ribs, right?
Yeah, so I think that probably gives you a little bit of insight into how Vegas is feeling about this game. I was a little bit shocked, though, to see the Falcons favorite.
Flak jacket and narcotics. He'll be fine.
which narcotics?
Yeah, which ones?
Well, be more specific.
Take your pick.
I always go back.
Call Dr. Feelgood. He'll hook you up.
Rob, correct me. Was it Casino where Ace Rothstein comes in and is like, yeah, I got a tip that, you know, the quarterback wasn't feeling well or something. It's like it was Robert De Niro's character. He was so well at reading because he knew what was happening with the actual players' lives.
Yep.
And that's why he was so good at doing games, and that's why he made the mob so much money. That's what I always think of. Always like when I hear Nick Underhill tweeted on Tuesday night, there should be some interesting. And I think he covers the Saints for the Athletic. Maybe I can't remember who he actually covers them for, but he said, "Hey, there's going to be some injuries that come out Wednesday that's going to surprise you about the Saints team that could make you scare you really." And then Alvin Kamara doesn't practice yesterday with the ribs and I think a knee or something else. And then all of a sudden, boom, really? Okay, well, what else is there that's out there? When Vegas makes that line, that's basically you get 3 points for being the home team, right?
Yep.
So Vegas has no clue really what to do with this game because of the Falcons and the Saints injuries.
So what does it mean when the George is favored by two on the road? Does that mean they're actually a 1-point underdog at Alabama?
No, they're a 5-point favorite.
They'd be a 1-point.
I've seen a favored by two.
No, what I'm saying is Vegas
they
thinks they're a 5-point
site,
favorite.
Vegas would be saying you're a 5-point favorite.
Well, here's the number for you. Alabama favored at home 113 consecutive games until Saturday.
I think, Rob, that I actually played in the last time, the game. The last time.
Really?
Yeah, I did.
Who was the opponent?
2007. I think it was LSU who won the national title that year.
Was that the 5-4 game y'all played?
No, it was a little bit before that. That was the national title
11.
Run they had in Jacob Hester and all those guys in 07. Nah, man, it's it
didn't.
I'm so curious to see how that game pans out because it's a little bit of a strange feeling over there in Tuscaloosa right now. You really don't know what you have. You don't know at all what you have. I think if you're Bama right now, so
it's the Nick Saban effect to your point. Yeah. You don't know what Kalen DeBoer is in SEC games. This is his first SEC game.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the wild thing for me. I didn't realize it yesterday until I went on that little mini rant during Which One Wednesday.
Yeah.
I didn't realize. It just hit me. I was like, hell, this is his first SEC game. That's kind of a wild thing. And he's got a quarterback in Jalen Milroe that you've kind of decided that you're changing the way you use him. Like, I feel like the way that Saban and company tried to use him last year is completely different than the first three games away.
Well, he's got
Kalen DeBoer.
He's got a new coordinator. Most of his skill position players are different too, for the most
part. Yeah, for pretty much all of them, honestly. You don't have much back at the skill positions or at the running back spot. Although you do have, I think the running back spot's actually improved for Alabama compared to what you were. I think Justice Haynes. I said this a couple of times. I think Justice Haynes out of Buford High School, Veron's son, might be my favorite player in college football. Like he is now he has to grow as far as, you know, third downs and everything else. But Rob, he's one of those people you get in space and he is unbelievable how electric that kid is with the ball in his hands. But to Bo's point, they've drastically changed what they're trying to do offensively. And I think last year what you had is you had Jalen Milroe running a spread offense. And then I think you got in tight situations and you do this against Georgia. And you run zone read, right? And you'd run some RPO concepts with a zone read, and Jalen Milroe would wait till the end, crash down, and then he'd pull it, and he'd run to the edge. And you saw it against Georgia probably four or five times. He gains 8-10 yards, gets a first down out on the edge. It just – Michigan came in with a good game plan for that, and they kind of forced Jalen Milroe back inside, with some of the leverage they played outside, and he, you know, couldn't overcome it, couldn't make plays in the open field with his legs. So it's a little bit different this year, Rob, in terms of the game planning that they have for Jalen Milroe. They ask him to run counters, and they let him run downhill. There's not a lot of perimeter runs out of the shotgun and everything else. It's like, hey, we're going to run a speed sweep action, and you're going to run the freaking A-gap like a running back. And so it's a different dynamic for a guy like Jalen Milroe this year. And I actually love it, although some people would say that, you know.
I love it for if I'm an Alabama fan, because I think it helps you win football games. I don't love it if I'm Jalen Milroe and wanting my future in the NFL. I don't think – I think that he's going to have to learn how to continue to grow in that part of the game as an NFL player if that's his goal. I think not making him throw those throws doesn't, you know, help him moving forward. Like, I don't think it helps him. I think it's what Tom Brady has said in a lot of ways where – and I don't like the terminology.
You're talking about the slants, the curls.
Yeah,
the
intermediate stuff.
Yeah.
All that stuff in there, that stuff you're going to have to throw as an NFL player, and that makes it where you're not going to be ready. It's, you know, Tom Brady said about this, we're dumbing the game down for the young players, and then when they come to the NFL, we don't give them time to grow in the game. And it's like, hey, you were thrown in there like Bryce Young was done, and which I think you had to do where you drafted him for what you gave up. You had to play him. And then when things don't go well, you just quit on him. And you throw them away, and then their NFL careers are gone, in a flash.
See, to me though, that's not a Bryce Young problem. That's an NFL problem. Like that is because you have to do it now because the investments and eyeballs you have on the number one overall pick, they have to play now.
Yes, but it's also the fact that college football used to, it's if you ran a wishbone offense or whatever, it was pretty much a given you weren't an NFL prospect quarterback or you weren't a pocket quarterback. But if you went to schools like Michigan where they ran more of a pro style, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust, but you could make all those throws, you had a better chance of being in. You were a guy that looked at being an NFL quarterback. Eric Crouch left and was a safety, right?
That's right. They came back and made him a DB. Yep.
Yeah, and so I mean, Tommy Frazier. Now I don't even know if he went to the NFL. Like those guys that ran those type of offenses, but the guys that ran more NFL style. Now it's all one big, just mosh.
Well, let me back up. Here's what I would say to you. If he could make the throws and be consistent, I think they'd utilize the
But throws. I think he can. I think he showed progress last year.
Tell me one first-round quarterback, and there was a lot of them, that did not run a spread offense where everything was go balls. Caleb Williams, Lincoln Riley's offense, Bo Nix, Oregon wide open. Michael Penix, for the love, running Kalen DeBoer's offense. This is what they all ran.
Yes, I
Jaden don't. Jaden Daniels. Holy crap, man. Go balls.
Yeah, they ran a lot of it, but you still have to progress. A lot of that is made easier if you're getting to practice those in real game experiences. And I say practice because, yeah, you're trying to win games. I just think it's doing a disservice to say we don't even want to ask you to do that. You're going to have to be asked to do that eventually. And it's a natural progression. And not everybody – that's why these guys take – look at Sam Darnold now. This guy was a bust. He was the same people that you turn on your radios and you listen to who are praising him for being a great player trashed him for years. Baker Mayfield is a perfect example of a guy who was trashed by the media.
Kyler Murray.
And now they're in love. Well, but see, Kyler Murray is still not there yet.
That's tough because he's close.
They look pretty good
this
year.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, okay, yeah. How do you look Sunday, though? That's the thing. Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, how did Baker Mayfield look Sunday?
Well, yeah, but they're,
we can't nitpick that.
Okay, but Baker Mayfield looked that way all last year. So that's not.
But he looked what way all
last year? He looked great last year. He looked great. Baker Mayfield was good last year. Baker Mayfield showed that my point is that you make it where these guys have years to progress into that player. That's the only thing that you can say about the Michael Penix pick that looks really good right now is that, hey, he's going to have a couple years to learn, to grow.
Like I said, I think that is an NFL problem. I don't think that's college football's issue, man. Your job in college football is to go out and win football games, especially this day and age.
Well, it's easier now that you're paying these guys, yeah.
Exactly.
But guess what? You weren't paying over the table. You're only under the table payments were being made to guys like Baker Mayfield when he was at Oklahoma. Okay? So you did him a disservice.
Right.
All right, gonna come back. We're gonna hear from Falcons coach Raheem Morris. And you're gonna give us a couple of those mind blowing numbers.
I'm gonna sprinkle those in there.
Sprinkle them in there. We're gonna have Falcons seasoned with mind blowing numbers from one Mike Johnson. It's the Morning Shift Sports Radio 99 again.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age, wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I. com.
Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm, morganandmorgan.com. If you have an axe to grind for someone that perpetrated pain upon you and your family. Welcome back to the Morning Shift, Triple In for Tiffany. Back with you tomorrow's one, and Monday, by the way.
Yeah, man. Just getting up.
Oh, that means I got a man up on Monday.
That's
normally
right.
I'm rarely held accountable for my frivolous rantings.
Yes, dude. Yeah, last week was a pretty good week for me and Bo.
Yeah, so. We went a combined 6-2.
Yeah, the week before that, though, was a bloodbath. We went and combined 1-7 week before. So,
yeah.
Well, you're losing your draft pick is what you're doing. Just keep winning.
Yeah, yeah, man.
I'm just trying to get back to 500.
It's been the good has been good, and the ugly has been just, that's what they say, Rob. If you're going to lose, lose big. I mean, that's what we've been doing.
Falcons hoping to get to 500 on a Sunday with that 1 o'clock kick against the hated New Orleans Saints. And, oh, by the way, I will be back at the Signia by Hilton for the Falcons flyover around 5:30 or something, 6 o'clock, something like that.
Yep. So. Beers will be on you because we're going to win.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, I'll buy them, then I'll just duck out on the tap like I always do. And I'll be all right. It's all good.
This Seabass and the fellas offered to pick more.
Oh, Seabass said
nice,
that?
Nice, dumb dumber.
Well, if that guy down there at the end is Seabass.
That guy right down there is Rob Tribble, then yeah, that's him.
Wine him, dine him. Yeah, never mind. Okay. All right. Issues with the Falcons. We know time of possession has been a big one. Third down, certainly. Lack of sacks, too. I don't know. The defense has played pretty well.
Yeah.
I also think you've played Justin Fields, Jalen Hurts, and Patrick Mahomes.
Now you're going to three drastically different types of quarterbacks, your classic dropback dudes for these 3 weeks.
Yeah, I think Baker can move around.
He can move around a little bit. Yeah. Certainly.
Honestly, most of them can't. The two outliers, I think, moving forward will be Dak and Jaden Daniels, as you look at the schedule right now. Other than that, Baker can move around. A number of them can move around, but it's like...
Well, Baker thrives in the chaos when a play breaks down. That's when he's actually pretty good.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, I think Baker's more in the mold of, Patrick Mahomes than he is Justin Fields. Mm-hmm. He's going to take the opportunity when presented. So.
I agree. I think the thing that we don't think about, and I didn't really realize it, Mike, or Rob, until Mike and I were watching some stuff on the Kansas City last week before the game, they move that pocket naturally a lot with him. And he does, he's so, like, you don't realize that they're moving the pocket with Mahomes, but it's so slight, and he does it so, the way he does it is so fluid and just, just like, it's just like he's moving, but you don't realize he's moving.
Yeah, yeah, it's like he's just sliding
kind
across
of floating.
Ice. Yeah, yeah, it's good stuff.
All right, well, a couple things offensively have gone well. Of course, Zach Robinson's been in the crosshairs by a lot of people at this station, me included, just everybody for the most part. But things have gone well. That game-winning drive against Philadelphia and a couple things here and there. Let's hear from Zach Robinson on building on those drives.
No, 100%. That's what we're trying to be as consistent as we can at all times. And like I said, each drive is kind of its own entity, and just making sure that we're connected all as one. I thought that Philadelphia game, like you mentioned, like you could just feel all 11 connected the entire time. And that comes from us as coaches bleeding into these guys. So we certainly have our hand in a lot of responsibility with that. So we're continuing to build chemistry as an offense as well. These guys are getting a feel for each other. We've had a ton of reps banked in the off season and training camp, but the games are, naturally just a little bit different. So feeling what guys' game day demeanor is like, all those different things that go into it, I think these guys will just continue to get more comfortable with each other and continue to build on that execution that we're looking for.
Big takeaway from that, you're trying to cultivate some chemistry. I see that. That's obvious.
Yeah, and let me go ahead and drop this first number nugget on you guys, and this is one of the ones Bo was talking about earlier. All right, so stick with me when I say this, that 35% of Atlanta's sets of downs have actually reached third down. That's the lowest rate in the league. So that means they are doing a phenomenal job on first and second down of not even allowing it to get to third down, right? You look at it and go, dude, they've been so bad on third, but at the same time, you've won a game and you came within a score in another two games. So how has that even happened? The answer is that on 35% of your sets of downs, you didn't even allow it to get to third down. So that's pretty unbelievable. That's the best rate in the NFL.
That tells me that, everybody – remember Jeff Collins came to Georgia Tech, and other than he had guys working out, he would say, on the sidelines for a game, say, money down, third down is the money down. And it's kind of a thing that throughout – football is like the third down is the money down. When I hear that stat, I would tell you that's great because that's, if you get to a third down, the drive continues. But Arch talks about this all the time. The most important play, and it's for this team right now as an offense, is the first down.
Yeah.
Because if they don't gain a yard or they go backwards, if they don't have any success, the drive is immediately being killed, is what I'm being told, because you're
ideally, what do you want? At least 5 yards, 6 yards first down.
Dude, give me a second and six, a second and seven, your own schedule.
Success on these early downs is, I agree with Bo, but when you look at like standing outs, they are usually measured on first and second down. Did you get half the line to gain?
Mm-hmm.
Like, did you get five on first? If it's second and eight, did you get four? That kind of thing. So that's kind of how you measure those things. So I thought that was interesting because 35.5% of Atlanta sets of downs have reached third down. That's the, like I said, that's the best in the league. But when they have reached third down, they've only converted, as we know, 23%. So that is 31st in the league, which is not good. It's like once you get to third, you better score points before you get to third because it's bad.
More importantly, offensive line, the injuries. I mean, well, what's the latest on that?
Yeah.
Dahlman's on the IR.
Dahlman's on the IR. Yep, he's gone for a while.
So you got Hennessy coming back and the practice squad, and you'll have Neusel. And I honestly think Hennessy will probably be elevated as a practice squad elevation.
You said that yesterday, and I don't necessarily disagree. I just think that that's quite a leap to consider he's coming off the street. Like, you don't really know what kind of shape he's in. And also, it's a different offense. I have a hard time believing you're going to walk right off the street and be elevated on game.
That news will snap the ball left-handed.
Yes, he does. And I mentioned this yesterday. It was interesting to me. You saw Kansas City shift to three guys on the left side in some of their pass rushers. And I watched it, and I go, man, what kind of stunt are they about to run? Or at 3-by-1 defensive line. And then I realized what it was is just Chris Jones and those other guys were going to a snap pan. They were having to go unbalanced on the defense line because he's left-handed, and they were attacking his snap hand. It's so much harder when you're snapping to get up and actually defend yourself with that arm when you're a center.
Well, there's a couple of little wobbly snaps, too, when he first came in.
Yeah.
That's an adjustment.
Yeah, and one of those was on Cousins, just bobbled it, just fumbled it. And
was that a testament to a left-handed snap, though?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it was right in his hands. I mean, sure, maybe, but
I'm sure it looks different when you have to make that switch in the middle of a drive.
Yeah, I mean, I understand it, but if it's in your hands, it's in your hands.
I also want to highlight this because I told Dylon this during the game. This is an absolute no-no when it comes to offensive line play, and unfortunately, you don't ever think about it when you have injuries. But, Dylan, what's the one thing I said? I said, man, what happened to Drew Dahlman? And Dylan said what?
He got rolled up on.
Yeah, he got rolled on, and then what'd he do right afterwards?
Oh, he hopped on one leg.
He
said it's a no-no.
Dude. And I cannot tell y'all this enough. That is an absolute freaking no-no. He's got to know better than that. That is an absolute no-no. Why? The last thing you want is to hop onto the sideline, then you don't get any injury timeout, and then Ryan Neusel has no snaps with Kirk Cousins and is running on the field trying to get a center quarterback exchange right in the middle of a freaking drive.
And that was the beauty of what happened in that actual situation was the quarter end.
Yeah, the quarter ends, and then all of a sudden you're starting to get the snaps. I thought, like, I was like, dude, and I know that is a conversation they've probably had in the past. If you get injured as a center, you simply cannot afford to hop off the field. It is an absolute stage 10 no-no.
I'll say this, talking about offensive line injuries, we don't know what McGarry's status is, but I feel better with Storm Norton and Neusel than I would if I was New Orleans, where they got McCoy, who is out. And now, as of what their plan is, based on everything they've said and what they did Sunday, they're moving Lucas Patrick to center because he's their backup center. And Ole Odu is going to be the guy who is a swing tackle in some ways, is swinging into left guard. So they're weakening two spots as well, and we're just bringing in guys that we've trusted as backups over the last few years.
All right, going to hear from Raheem Morris and Zach Robinson. Falcons getting ready for the Saints, and again, Falcons flyover live at the Signia by Hilton, probably around 6 o'clock on Sunday. Flagship station of the Falcons, Sports Radio 99.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Again. You want to go to Dega, baby?
It's Dega, baby.
Talladega.
Dega.
We're going to be giving tickets away for the Sunday, October 6th race. What is it going to be? A family four-pack, huh?
There you go.
There we go.
Bring it's a playoff race.
There's your cultural bullion base of humanity there in Dega,
Robbie,
baby.
Bring your own, you bring your own cooler.
Talladega.
You bring your own cooler, whatever you want to throw in there. Load it down. And you get the free four-pack of tickets from 92.9.
No glass bottles.
That's your weekend. You want to talk about the cheapest weekend you can have.
Just it's right free, over the border,
free
too.
Free parking. You get the free tickets from us, and you bring your well, not free drinks. You got to buy them at the store. But
yeah,
but
you
cheap.
Can go. You can go like, you know, Natty Light.
That's a good point.
What is Dega? Hour 45 from here,
give or take.
If
depends on if they're doing road work on I-20.
I was going to say it all depends. I know they're going to redo. I think they're starting the process of redoing that I-20-285 interchange. But that whole interchange is a dumpster fire.
Mm. I made that trip many of times, and they were doing that. They were doing the road work through there.
Yeah.
To Talladega, and it's.
I've never told you a story about that.
It's an easy ride though.
That's that. You know, you get on the other side of the state line. I don't know if I got drafted here, and I kept driving down 20, and I would cross the state line in the road. Everything between Birmingham and the state line was under construction. for the first 6 or 7 years I lived here. Finally, I asked somebody involved in the state. I said, "What happened?" They said, basically, they gave the contract out to somebody that tried to do it cheaply, and they put a thin layer of asphalt over the interstate, and a semi-truck kicked up a chunk and went through somebody's windshield.
Well, there you go.
So they shut the whole interstate down to 50 miles an hour for that 100-mile stretch, and they had to redo it over the course of, like, 8 years. I was like, dude, that's the most Alabama thing I've heard in a long time. Let's try to be cheap on the interstate.
There's certain roads that's always under construction. I-20 going to Birmingham or Talladega.
400-285.
400-285.
Thank God that's finished. That's right by my house. That's
75 south below like Locust Grove area.
Oh my God.
That's always a nightmare.
Yeah, down there. And it's either bad traffic, but there's always been a lot of construction down 75 south a lot. It's just like, and now the last time I went through Chattanooga going to Nashville.
Yeah.
That's under construction now,
too. Downtown Chattanooga is always a mess.
Yeah, it's a debacle.
All right, Falcons getting ready for the Saints coming up on Sunday, 1 o'clock. You can hear right here on Sports Radio, 92.9 Game. What time's pregame start? The Wade Ford tailgate? What's that about? 6 a.m.?
Wade Ford's at 9. Pregame show starts at 11 with Mike Johnson and Chris Goforth.
Boom!
And then at 1 o'clock, of course, 1:02, West Durham and Dave Archer and you know, one of the greatest producers of all time, me.
Well, I will say so myself. I think we have the best pregame show in the NFL. So if you want to hear some really good numbers thrown at you that continues what I'll be talking about today in this segment, then you'll want to hear that at 11 o'clock.
You're going to rain man your way through that thing,
you know
aren't
what I
you?
Mean? I just love it, man.
By the way, we're going to have buckets of rain today and some high winds. Looks like the rain's going to move out about lunchtime tomorrow, though. So just grin and bear for the next 30 hours.
That's good because
like that.
Lone Star's playing in downtown Sandy Springs, so I want to hit that. You know what I mean?
Get that
thing.
Tomorrow night?
Yeah.
Oh, not tonight, though.
No, thank God.
All right. Falcons, third down's been an issue for them, obviously. Let's hear from Raheem Morris about that.
There's no one specific thing, right? Because you got to put it all in different buckets, right? There's something happening in third down that happened in the red zone, and that's red zone execution. Some of them happen in these long yardage situations, which you don't want to be in. You know, the 12-plus, the 11-plus, those are not likely ones that you can attain. You can get them every once in a while, but you don't want to live in that world. So that becomes down to efficiency on first down. And then the ones that you want to get, like the ones at the end of the game, the short yardage, whether you're talking about 3rd-and-1 or 4th-and-1, those are the ones you got to have. And those are the moments you got to stand up and be your best version of yourself, and we haven't been right now.
He was on Dukes and Bell, by the way, yesterday.
Yeah, and it's all about making sure that you don't allow the other team to create pressure. And I think that's going to be – to me, pressuring the quarterback is a bigger deal for this game than it's been, and on both sides, than it's been throughout the season so far. We all know, I mean, it's almost a historical fact at this point, when Derek Carr is under pressure, he's not good.
Yep.
And Kirk Cousins, for the most part, this season has not been good. Like, neither one of them so far this year have been good on third down under pressure, man. So I think that's a massive key to the game for sure.
I think it always is. I think anytime you can speed a quarterback's clock up, even guys that want to run, if you speed them up, there are times where you can run them into sacks because that's honestly been one of the issues at Justin Fields.
Or run them in interceptions.
Yeah, Justin Fields and Russell Wilson. Remember all the conversation, all the sacks? They have ran themselves into sacks at times in their career. Now, it hasn't been a problem this year, but they've done a good job of protecting. But it's always that way when you can speed a quarterback up. That's why the guys will tell you that sacks aren't as important as pressures.
Yeah. Well, I do have these stats to throw at you guys. Derek Carr last week was pressured on 44% of his dropbacks, which is a huge uptick from what it was in week one and week two. It was 12% and 29%. 44% of his dropbacks when he was pressured on those 44%, 3 of 11 for 19 yards and an interception. 3 of 11 for 19 yards and an interception when he got pressured last week. And shout out to Jalen Carter for getting that done as well, because he had the best game of the year so far.
It's crazy how the NFL could work, because the Saints look like offensive juggernauts first 2 weeks of the season, then last week that
matchups. And the same thing happened to the Bucks. They allowed, I think, like 8 or 9 sacks with Denver, and it was just about they were getting pressure on Baker, and it changed that game. I think Jalen Carter had his best game as an NFL player.
He smelled blood in the water. When they started shuffling that O-line for New Orleans, he was like, it's go time.
Well, he wanted to fight after the game, too, after all that nonsense.
You know what he looked like, Rob, when I was watching tape? I told Bo this. He looked like vintage Ndamukong Suh. That's what he looked like.
That's nasty.
You knew he had the power to bull rush you, so you had to get a little lean as an offensive lineman. The minute you did, swim move in the backfield.
And for him, it's going to be consistent. You know, guy consistency. Why are you not? And I know that you're not going to have it week in and week out. It's going to be hard. They're going to play you differently. Sure. You're going to have guys that know how to play you that maybe match up well, just like we talked about. But week in and week out, why is that not something? Because you look at him and talent wise, and what everybody says about him, he's a guy that can dominate if he wants to. And why don't you want to every week? That was one of the questions coming out of him on him in college. So,
well, that's also aside from the incident up there in Athens, of course. That's what probably scared a lot of people away too. Varying degrees of engagement and desire.
To your point, it's just interesting too, because like I said, he smelled blood in the water. The line gets shuffled around. I don't know. You know, Clint Kubiak, the OC down there, has done a good job, but I don't know if he was like ready to react to Eric McCoy going down. So it was like, man. What do I do now? Oh, I stick with the same game plan. Oh, my God, it's not working. And Jalen Carter's like, all right, cool.
Well, Cesar Ruiz didn't have a good game either against him, and him getting banged up didn't help. He's also banged up, by the way.
Well, third down also an issue defensively for the Atlanta Falcons. This segment brought to you by Third Down, by the way. Let's hear from Raheem Morris on that, third down defensively.
There's no one specific thing, right? Because you got to put it all the first couple of games. Got some tough sacks. Got a couple hits in this game. Got 8 of them. They had 13. I think they had 2 sacks or 1 sack. I'm not sure. But we definitely got to get home so we can create some of these longer third downs or get off the field.
It's just like I said on offense. I said that's the most important down for the Falcons offensively is first down, having success on first down. It's equally the same defensively. If you allow, and this has been a problem in our run
football 101, right?
In our run defense, we're allowing guys like last week, Carson Steele would run off a 7-yard chunk on first down. Well, now you turn around to 2nd and 3. They have their entire playbook open now that they can do whatever they want because they have a free down essentially.
Right.
And with Patrick Mahomes, the last thing you want to give him is a free down. Any NFL quarterback, really. The Falcons defensively, if they want to get more pressures or create these, you know, turnovers, I think to me it's having success on first down as a defense and putting someone in a 3rd and 6 or a 2nd and 7 or 9 or whatever. That to me is where you're going to be able to create those sacks and turnovers.
And you're spot on. That the long yardage downs is where the sacks and turnovers happen. And here's, Rob, here's your final stat of this segment. The most damning to me stat between these two teams, and it kind of tells you what the season has been so far for these two teams. The Saints are averaging 6.0 sacks plus takeaways. Sacks plus takeaways, right? Forced turnovers. 6.0 per game. That's number 3 in the league. The Falcons are averaging 1.7 sacks plus takeaways per game. That's 30th.
Didn't the Saints kind of, that number could be kind of inflated, skewed,
it definitely
due
is.
To the fact, especially week one against Carolina.
On well, both sides.
Fact, yeah.
On both sides. And here's what I'll tell you, Rob. We had this conversation yesterday with Brian Baldinger. I would argue that the Falcons have played 3 of the hardest quarterbacks to rush in the NFL. Like, you just... You can't pass rush Jalen Hurts and Patrick Mahomes and Justin Fields the way you would any other quarterback, and the way hopefully they can start rushing Derek Carr this weekend.
I would even tell you that the Falcons have played 3 of the, you know, when you talk about the turnover thing, Falcons have played three of the tougher defenses in the league. I mean, Pittsburgh, you know, as far as yards per game, is the top defense in the league. I mean, they have been really good. Kansas City, we know, has a good defense. And then, you know, Philadelphia, now they might not have played well as well against us as we thought, but the reality is they went into New Orleans and they beat them up physically and shut down what was the best scoring offense in NFL.
All right, coming on, go in the huddle. What's the latest on Alvin Kamara? Did not practice yesterday, and seems like in the huddle going to be dominated by injury news, especially if you're the San Francisco 49ers. That's coming up next on the Morning Shift, Sports Radio 99 Game. Want a smart, lasting, clean, do you? Go to ZeroRes.com. Welcome back to the Morning Shift. Triple in for Tiffany. I'll be here tomorrow and Monday as well, so I'm going to have to man up on Monday.
It's going to be a lot of fun, man. There's some good games to pick.
Yeah. You won't have to man up if you just make the right picks.
Well, I have such a terrible track record of that.
I realize that I'm much better at the over-under selection than I am the base on the line. I've realized that because I won both my over-unders.
No, yeah. No, so the rules changed for that last week. We'll have to dive into that tomorrow.
The rules didn't change. They were never stated.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you where you've gone wrong, and I'm terrible too. So I'm not preaching to you. This is not what I'm trying to do. But there is a
sounds
realm.
Like
you've
it.
Made
feels like it.
You've made picks the last 2 weeks that are just recency bias. You are the Vanderbilt lost to Georgia State, and you're like, Mizzou's going to beat the crap out of Vanderbilt, and I'm like,
no,
dude, don't do this.
Hold on, that's not recency. Vandy has been terrible for years. Yes, they beat Va Tech at home.
I was going to say,
but let me finish. First game of the year at home. You know, upsets happen on the road on the sleeping 11 a.m. starts for local time. Mizzou, it was very dominant on offense last year. They look pretty good this year so far. They beat, I think, a good Boston College team handedly.
Well, they were ranked when they came in there.
Yeah, I expected them to handle business at home against a long-term doormat in the league. Sorry if that's not only that's recency bias. I think I just picked them on the wrong weekend.
Well, you just said Vanderbilt beat Virginia Tech.
Well, who the hell is Virginia Tech? I'm not buying that they're any good either.
Yeah, I mean, who the hell's Vanderbilt, to your point?
That's why I thought Missouri would win. I get what you're saying, because Vandy has looked like a much better team this year, even though they lost to Georgia State.
They play hard, man. They play hard.
You never want someone to say that about you. That's like when I walk in the door, he's like, somebody's like, yeah, he's pretty short, but he's kind of stout. I mean,
I get the he's a nice dude, man.
He's the Bryce Elder of sports talk radio host.
I'd like to think I'm a little bit more consistent than Bryce Elder. We got a couple of Bryce Elders around here, but I hope I'm not one of them.
Oh boy,
more of a Spencer Schwellenbach.
Boy, and that's something. Wasn't that something? What a great outing the other night by him, of course. And I've been high on him all year. I just saw it. I saw it.
Rob, we had Smoltz on. And Smoltz raved about him, and then right after our show, Steakhouse had Snitker on. And Steak, you know how Steak will interview you, and then he'll start asking you a question as you're answering the first question, and which I think is honestly really good. And he goes, but what did you know about him? And Snitker goes,
nothing.
He goes, hell, I didn't know anything about him. I didn't know who he was. He was an A-ball player, for God's sakes.
I had to have his last name phonetically spelled for me on a piece of paper.
What he said, he was an A-ball player coming into spring training. I didn't know anything about him.
How many baseball players go into a training camp? Like, how many actual players are in a training camp? Not the big league camp. I'm talking about the entire thing. Like, you go into training camp. Everybody in the organization is in the same place.
It feels like 100.
It's got to be right, like 100, 120. Doesn't that blow your mind, though, with Snicker saying that, how good some football, like college football coaches are at knowing players on their team?
Yep.
Like, when you step to a podium, they're like, hey, Scott Jones been running scout team corner for you. You're like, you just know that college football coach is going, What the hell is that?
Deion Sanders didn't even know the name of a starting center, right?
Yeah, well, that's a whole other topic, buddy. Didn't get me cranked off on that.
You can have up to 60 players on your spring training roster.
But that's the big league
roster.
That's the big league one.
Yeah. But I mean, you're
talking
about
a bunch of guys, though, getting at bats and everything else.
Yeah, you're talking about the organization, basically. Yeah. With the organization, that's hundreds, right?
Yeah,
it's got to be.
No Braves baseball tonight, clearly because of the weather. Royals coming to town. Doubleheader on Monday. Well, at least one game will be played on Monday. Everything could be decided. Don't know what Snett's going to do with the pitching staff. I have no idea.
I don't think anybody does, man. Yeah,
so
it's going
to
be interesting.
Really, that's all there is to say until we have baseball resuming tomorrow.
I think the decision he has to make and both of you guys can weigh in. I think he has to live in the moment and say, hey, it's this guy's turn. He's going to pitch against the Royals. Or does he say that those games with the Mets could carry more weight and we want our, you know, our best going in those?
Well, the Mets wouldn't carry any weight if you don't take care of business this weekend.
That's a good point.
I think you're – well, here's the question. Would you – Schwellenbach's due to pitch Sunday. That's his next day in the rotation. Are you willing to run him out there to save him, not pitch him Sunday, depending on where you stand, and run him out there Monday again? And he's making him essentially back to back starts.
It seems like daily it's going to be like a that day decision on who's going
to
pitch.
That's what I wanted to ask you too, Rob. Like, is that fair to the pitchers if you just say, "Hey, I'll let you know that morning"? Like, I don't think you can react appropriately if that's
the situation. I think this time of the year, all hands on deck sort of thing. You know.
Yeah, you got to be gritty about it.
Yep.
I like that. But I just think that's interesting, too, because I agree with you. It almost feels like a day-to-day decision. Like, you win Friday and Saturday, you know, hey, I'll talk to you Sunday. Maybe we push you back to Monday. But it's like, dude, I don't know if that's the whole season on the line, and you got to find out, you know, 5 hours in advance that you might be throwing that day. That's kind of a crazy twister in the brain, man.
So what do you guys think about what's going on out there with the Raiders? Antonio Pierce seems like clearly got out-coached. And didn't it? Of course, the Red Rifle looked fantastic. Seems like in his post game press conference, kind of shifting all the blame to his players, missed tackles here and there, but not taking accountability for the fact he was actually out coached. I don't think that's a very good look.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You know, the way him being a former player makes that very interesting.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's not like he hasn't been in those shoes, but I think he's probably right, and I like the fact that he didn't call anybody out by name. He just said basically the players made business decisions.
Yeah, sure.
And so I think that's the best way you can probably go about it if that's what's happening. Because I think that happens more than people realize in the NFL, in the game. It's like you get into certain situations and maybe you're a defensive line and the other team's running a lot of cut blocks, right? And you're like, dude, you know what? Down by two touchdowns? No thanks. I'm good on that. You know what I mean? Maybe I won't play to 100%. And so I think that's what he was calling out.
Yeah, a lot was made the way Devontae Adams was sitting on the bench at halftime and some of his body language. I try not to. If you're the coach and you want to say those things, I mean, there's some plays you can tell guys pull up or they're not giving full effort. We've seen guys quit on plays. That's one thing. But I think he would know, but it is a tricky, tricky road to go down when you start doing that.
Yeah. It'd be interesting, man. See how that pans out.
49ers, man, they've Brock Purdy, he's got a back issue. Did he have his MRI? Is he going to have an MRI? Christian McCaffrey out for quite a while, too.
Yeah, I don't know. Purdy was a full participant yesterday. Yeah. So was Sam Darnold. And, you know, he's been dealing with a knee injury, which they said had no structural damage, which is Sam Darnold in Minnesota, which is good for Minnesota and Sam Darnold because he's having a rejuvenation year.
Isn't it amazing how that works out? We're so quick to throw quarterbacks on the trash heap. Sometimes you just need to be in a better situation with better coaching and perhaps better personnel.
I love what you just said. Go back to that word. What'd you say? Better what? Better coaching?
Yeah.
Is there a chance that O'Connell up in Minnesota is way underrated as a head coach,
I
as an offensive mind? Because
so far, so good, right?
I know he's got some weapons in Hockenson and Justin Jefferson. Now Jordan Addison's been out. So I know he's got some players, but they've been good since he stepped foot up there.
I was going to say, you say he's underrated. I feel like I haven't rated appropriately. I think he's unbelievable.
But I don't – I think you, yes, but I think the average fan, which you're not, and that's not a knock on you. That's just because you played in the league. But the average fan, and even some in the national media, do not give him due. Like, Sean McVay hadn't won anything, and Sean McVay was crowned as an offensive genius. Now, he's deserved it. He's a hell of a coach and a play caller. But I feel like O'Connell won games last year with guys literally that Josh Dobbs came in here and was able to run an offense under O'Connell and beat us. Now, granted, we helped him in some situations, but the fact that they were competent with him, with Josh Dobbs in those situations because of how little he knew is a testament to the coaching.
As he's meeting his teammates before the game on the side.
I don't even remember the name of the guy that started that game. Do you? Was it Jared Hall? Was that his name?
Yeah, he was a rookie from BYU, I believe.
Yeah.
You
started Nick Mullins down the stretch for that team. No, I think the Browns, is it Stefanski with the Browns? Four starting quarterbacks last year and go to the freaking playoffs with Joe Flacco. I mean, those dude, that's so hard to do.
Okay, why can Kevin Stefanski run a team with Joe Flacco, and who was it? Was Snoop Huntley was one of the guys, right? Didn't he play in a game?
Yeah, DTR.
Yeah. Yet he got $250 million guaranteed, and they look like
I can't figure that out.
An NAIA team out
well,
there.
Well, and I'll say this too. I think a lot. I mean, Stefanski's very good. The defense was number one in the league last year. So
yeah, but Joe Flacco ran that offense so efficiently.
I mean, he did.
The defense has not changed. They're pretty much the same defense. Now Myles Garrett's a little banged up with his foot issue, which it looks like he's going to play. I think a lot of that lies at the quarterback's feet. I'm sorry, I don't want to blame one person, but when you pay $250 million guaranteed and you've had all the things you've had off the field and the team wins without you but it can't win with you, you might be the weakest link. Mm.
This hour brought to you by Zero Res, smart, lasting, clean, ZeroRes.com. ZeroRes.com. Well, I guess then, mic'd up, we're going to talk about how college football is even, well, it's pretty much confirmed it's lost its soul.
College football is burning.
Yeah.
The roof is on fire, Rob. All things are coming down around us. We're going to talk about this UNLV situation. I think the biggest loser in this whole situation is the person that thinks they know what the solution is. That's what we'll talk about coming up on the other side. It's mic'd up. Morning Shift, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Oh, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's mic'd up. I got to tell you guys, having a lot of fun so far this morning. The last 2 hours are definitely better than the previous 2 hours today. First of all, wife's car is in the shop. She's got Alona. You guys remember that scene from The Mask? Hey, her, bring around the Lona.
The Lona. Right?
So with the car seats being in my truck, I had to take the Lona to work this morning,
Ross.
Which is just, it looks hideous. I look like Donnie. I look like Donkey Kong and Mario Kart driving this thing, man. Like my head's almost out the sunroof.
Dude, Mike's normally Mike and I get here around 5 minutes. I would say most days of each other, give or take. Right? I mean that's pretty accurate. So we'll wait. And I pull up. I don't see Mike's truck. I said, "Damn, that's 2 days in a row. I beat Mike." I was like, "And I'm not early today. Like I feel like I'm,
you're
a little bit
early yesterday. Yeah, today. Yeah.
I feel like I was a little bit later or more on schedule today than I am. And but I see this little, I don't even know if you can call it an SUV, like one of those, what do you call those?
The crossover?
The crossovers, yeah, crossovers.
AMC Pacer.
And
this is rough, man.
And there's the lights are on. And I go, oh, that must be that security guard that sleeps in his car. And then I get closer and I'm back in and I see like this like head, like he's like leaned over, like hunched over, like the roof's too small. And then all of a sudden, The car like bounces up because Mike got out of it. And I was like, what the hell's going on over there?
You know what you just reminded me of, though? And I'm scared because I'm pretty sure there's probably no auto on the lights in that car. Hopefully I didn't leave them on down there because that's going to be bad. Dude, there is nothing automatic about this car. Like, I couldn't even find the air conditioning knobs this morning.
Hey.
It's definitely an aged vehicle.
I got the jumper cables.
There you go.
I know you got to get your story, but Rob wouldn't know. We went to AMS and did the ride along. His truck was dead.
Truck dead.
And I had put some jumper cables. I have two sets of jumper cables. I have a promotional pair that I was given actually from AMS, believe it or not. And then I have a heavy duty set that I have. I put the little ones in my truck because they had a little bag.
Little pouch
right. For them. It was real clean. I got to jump them off. But the time it did not work because his got a 2500. Right. But by the time we went to pull them off, you needed gloves. They were so hot.
Yeah, they were about ready to melt. So
now I've put my big boys back in, and my wife calls me today. She's like, "I'm broke down at the gas station right by the road." And I go, "Well, what's wrong? Well, I think something's wrong with my." She thought it was like her starter. So I go up there, and I've got these huge cables,
I put them on,
and I literally connected them, and I cranked my truck, and I walked over, and I just pushed her button and went. Boom, cranked right up, and I was like, damn.
Didn't blow up.
Yeah. So anyways, my power went out of my house. I jumped in the old loner, and so we're having a fun show today, more or less, to bring all that home. All right, so I want to talk to you about this news that kind of came out yesterday morning. It's about Matthew Slucka, the, I guess he's not the starting quarterback for UNLV anymore.
Was.
He has abandoned that program. I don't use the term abandoned in an extremely terrible light, but he has decided that he is going to redshirt. He is going to move elsewhere. Now, Barry Odom, when contacted yesterday, I believe Dennis Dodd is the one that put this out. The response to the text about the situation, Barry Odom says, thought he had a market value higher than he was making here. Basically, like, he didn't like what he was being offered. He goes elsewhere. There are reports coming out of ears. There are reports coming out of every single side of what is going on with this. First and foremost, there is an agent involved. And whenever there is an agent involved in these kind of events, you start looking into what's going on with the quarterback, what's going on with the program. This is the first time in the history of UNLV football they've been ranked. All right. Sluka comes over. He's from Holy Cross. Evidently, he was promised money that he was not getting. Now, here's where it gets a little hairy. All right. The UNLV Collective, which is kind of actually, I didn't get it at first. It's called UNILV with NIL in the middle. UNILV. Pretty clever. Anyways, so the UNILV Collective, you know, they were asked to comment on this. They're run by a company called Blueprint Sports, right? They said less than a month ago was the first time they had actually met an agent. The agent's name is Marcus Cromartie. That was the first time they'd ever even met this guy. He is not a registered agent in the state of Nevada. Now, neither here nor there. It's like, you know, hardly ever these things looked into. Somebody has to basically file a complaint and everything else. I want to start right there, though. What was you guys' initial reaction when you saw this news come out that this kid was leaving UNLV's program?
Both sides have a point.
Yeah.
Get it in writing.
Yeah. What about
college football has lost its soul. Now there's an ick factor associated with the whole thing.
Well, I mean,
what was the initial reaction, Bo?
I was like, that's UNLV. Who cares? That's kind of the first thing I thought, honestly. But then when I heard more about it, because I was like, oh, it's UNLV. When I hear more about it, I just start thinking about, yeah, this is an issue. This is the broken system. This is, thank you, government, for getting involved in college sports.
I got to tell you, one of the things I first thought of, and I think this is one of the things that's not right in the crosshairs of this entire situation, but probably should be. I just mentioned a minute ago, this kid's from Holy Cross. This was his first month ever at the Division I level, right? So he transfers in. He's looking for money. It's just interesting to me, too. And Coach Saban actually said this on College Game Day. I think he was referencing Florida State, if I'm not mistaken, last week. And he says, look, there was a reason all these guys were in the portal to begin with, right? You're not building the correct culture in-house at this program to be able to allow these kids to play for a program that they're proud of and they've helped build.
Well,
and so I think that's part of this entire equation, is it not?
Can I touch on that real quick?
Sure.
All the criticism Dabo gets about refusing to go in the portal, all the criticism, and now there's a lot of people who criticize Dabo who are also criticizing this kid, and this is why Dabo doesn't do that, because he doesn't want that culture in his building. That's his whole point. And he's being vilified for it. Now, I think he's going a little extreme with it, and it's probably going to cost him winning in the future. But, yeah.
I'm with you. And anytime you get companies involved, and like I said, there is a company that runs this UNILV collective, and it's called Blueprint Sports, and there is a company that is representing Matthew Sluka, right? And so it's not just Matthew Sluka and UNLV. It is Matthew Sluka going through the agent, going through the company, that company going through the representative company and the collective, and that collective talking to Barry Odom and UNLV Athletics. There are so many freaking layers to this thing that if you think out there and you're thinking to yourself, well, this guy is to blame, you're the one in the wrong. The system right now is what's to blame over this entire situation.
You're so right. And that's the thing that drives me nuts is whenever, I said this earlier, every single person, Rob, that you hear it, it says, well, all they had to do was this, or they would have done this. All these little plans that people who have no knowledge of anything in the working systems of these universities or the NILs or college athletics as a whole, all these little answers they have, there is much of the problem because they're feeding this narrative that is so false and so wrong, and they're pile jumping a broken system and making it worse.
Well, and let me finish with this, and I know we got to go to break. Here's, and I want to ask Rusty about this in just a minute. Rusty Mansell is going to join us here in just a minute. The question you have to ask yourself, if you think you have the answer to this situation, the one question you need to look into your own soul and ask yourself is, will they get sued? And I'm talking about any way you UNLV, the NCAA, the Mountain West, this kid, the representative, will they get sued? Because somebody in this situation is going to get sued no matter what comes out of this. UNLV, heck, you could see a situation down the road, not right in this one, you could see a situation down the road where maybe you're a running back at UNLV. Well, that's not a good representation. Maybe you're a wide receiver at UNLV. This kid, Matthew Sluka, who you trained with and put all this sweat equity in, he might get sued. You might sue him. Can you imagine a wide receiver being like, dude, you left me. I could have made money, and you left me out to dry.
The law of unintended consequences,
it's just
crazy.
Like, there is going to be so many lawsuits flying in the future of college football, and I don't have all the answers.
What if this assistant coach says he says it in passing, it was a joke or something, and he sues Sluka for defamation of character?
Yeah. Well,
there you go.
Here's the end-all, be-all. Here is what the end-all, be-all is. You want the solution? Contracts. Contracts are going to have to happen. I don't know how they happen when you don't have this employment. In the end, once NCAA just okays pay for play and you have to sign these contracts, that's when all this comes down.
Yeah, but we all know what contracts mean in the world of sports.
It means more lawsuits.
it's broken. They're destroying themselves. And, again, law of unintended consequences. We're going to talk to Rusty Manziel about this as well. Chairman of the Georgia High School Football Hall of Fame, co-host of the Steakhouse, going to join us next. Morning Shift Sports Radio, 1990 Game. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. You want to sell your house? Well, look to Mark Spain and get to packing. All right, let's get right to it. He is the Hall of Fame. Well, look, you are all involved in the Georgia High School Football, co-chairman of that, co-host of the Steakhouse. One Rusty Manziel. Rusty.
Blah, 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 blah. Let me tell you something.
I have four daughters, so that's called the wedding fund, Rob.
That's the wedding fund.
I am four hire.
God bless you. I've got one, and I don't want to smoke. I can tell you that.
My Venmo is like an FBI investigation waiting to happen with those daughters.
I'm not. Y'all going to have to handle this. I'm not talking to Rusty. Georgia Bama Hate Week. You know what I mean?
Oh, man. All right, Rusty.
Do we have to start with that game, or can we start somewhere else?
Well, no, I think we got to start with Matthews. Sluka leaving UNLV, and here's what NIL is creating. It's creating an entitled, self-obsessed group of young men, and I don't blame them because that's what's available to them. That's the rub. That's the complication of the whole matter.
I think we should get away with the word NIL and just go for pay for play.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it is. Like, there's no that guy's don't have an advertisement. He didn't have a billboard in Las Vegas. I mean, those types of things. And, you know, Travis Hunter is name, image, likeness. Brock Bowers last year was name, image, likeness. You know, these guys are on this Celsius commercial. That's name, image, likeness. A kid getting $25,000 a month as a freshman and at places, that's pay to play. So there's a lot of things. I'll say this. There's a lot of opinion on this. Be real careful which side you kind of choose in this, because this is the day and age. This is what's going on, but you don't know what this kid was promised. You don't know the private conversations it was had. It doesn't mean that Barry Odom was aware of what was going on. This kid's got an agent, like Mike said. You don't even know if this agent is registered. NFL, you have to be a registered agent. There's no laws in NCAA. It's just
– Well, there is in the state of Nevada. So that complicates things as well. And it's just funny because you mentioned the pay-for-play thing. It is funny how quickly – when it's not beneficial that you see the UNLV go to it and go, well, we don't mess with pay-for-play.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah,
we're out on that.
But I mean,
the minute you talk about that, we're out. I'm like, yeah, dude, sure.
Ask All-American Ricky White from Marietta High School why he didn't go to Notre Dame in the offseason. And I can tell you there was some – it wasn't about the tutors at UNLV. I can tell you that.
And that's the thing for me is I've heard it compared to Jaden Rashada's situation. It's completely different. The Rashada thing was an NIL collective that
third party.
Yeah. And the coach, when the player went – in the lawsuit, the coach basically just said, yeah, that's still good, that the collective is still good for that. This is a coach – this is supposedly, allegedly, a coach basically saying, you know what, here's we can get you this. I bet we could get you this amount of money. And the player took him for his word, hired an agent, and
he's
now they're –
He's got a real agent. He's got an NFL agent that represents high-level
Marcus
guys.
Marcus Cromartie. The name. Their agency, the Marcus Cromartie is a part of, actually represents Patrick Mahomes.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a legit agency.
Yep. They're in an impasse. That's it. Hey, let's do talk about it. I was just kidding when I said I don't want to talk about Alabama, Georgia. I really want to talk about it. Mike brought it up earlier, and we kind of debated about it, about the way Jalen Milroe is being used this year.
Totally different.
Yeah, and basically they're saying, where last year it felt to me like it was a situation where we want you to be a complete quarterback. Mm-hmm. We want you to the last thing we want you to do and you want you to rely on is your legs.
Yeah.
Now it's like, hey, they're
single
gonna
wing.
Yeah, they're basically
single wing.
They're taking away one or the other.
Yeah.
And you're gonna take which one?
It's a tailback in the eye.
Yeah,
it's a third running back. And they go to this at times when they need it. If you look at the South Florida game, the football nerd me, I watched the South Florida game last night. When they needed yards, they went to quarterback power. And last year, when you look at what they did with him, you know, you take a zone read and you do that with Jalen Milroe and you get him out in space. When he breaks the line of scrimmage and he gets a first down, he can simply slide down and let's spot the ball and go. When you run quarterback power and you get him 20 in tackles, you're going to take shots. So that's the end game with that. You know, and that's different because you got this big athlete. So then the real football nerd goes in, and I go watch Texas versus Washington. I'm like, there's no way they use Penix like this. And you go back and watch Texas versus Washington, absolutely they use Penix in the run game in that particular game. So
yeah. You had to.
So when you look at Kalen DeBoer and his brand and his offense, he's going to have that in his game. He just so happens to have a 225-pound big-ass athlete right now who throws a fantastic deep ball. I mean, there's a lot of things that worry you in that. For Georgia's sake, it worries you because you got to defend a true running back now at quarterback, and he can throw it over top of you. For Alabama's side, you worry about the shots he can take.
Should they be watching Indiana film of Penix and DeBoer together? Because remember when DeBoer was with Penix in Indiana, they used him as a running quarterback.
I guarantee you, Georgia's watched every ounce of tape that you can find on Kalen DeBoer the last 5 years offensively.
My question was going to be, how much do you think they're watching last year's SEC title game? Because I don't know. I think there's some stuff you can probably take away, but it is completely different.
It is different.
Doing,
it is different. That was a lot of zone read stuff.
Right.
I think the one thing, there was the third down in particular in the South Florida game in second half, maybe. This is what scares you. They have a dialed up blitz, South Florida, and the guy comes unblocked and he makes him miss, and everybody else is in man coverage. You know what he does? He runs it for about 18.
I brought the same thing up, and I was talking to a couple people yesterday. It's like, do you go to zone? You have to do a little bit of everything.
I think
when it comes to Ryan Williams, Bama's smaller 17-year-old wide receiver, it's been talked about a million times. It's almost like he's the kind of guy you would want to physical up and go press, you know, press at the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
Problem is, when you put him in motion and or try to man him up on the outside, you are turning and running with him. You're running vertical down the field, and there's a lot of space left behind you. I want to talk about the health of this defensive line, right, for Georgia, because I think that is such a huge – you talk about Kentucky and whether or not you could run the ball and Kentucky having success. Update us a little bit on the health of those guys.
Going to get Warren Brinson back, and that's a big piece of the puzzle. I ran into Warren Brinson a couple weeks ago. I was doing some interviews for Fox 5, and I remember walking down the hall. I was like, damn, I forgot how big Warren Brinson is. This is a 6'5 D tackle now. Mykel Williams, I think, is going to give it a go. And you look at him, and I believe it was Jordan Reed, the NFL guy. He had him the number one overall pro prospect in the offseason. Like, he's the number one player, could be the number one draft pick. He's probably going to give him as much as he can. I don't think it's 100%. And if you get him 15, 16 snaps and he gives you a pressure or two, it's a win-win there. Jordan Hall, the other kid, I don't think he's going to be able to go, in my opinion. So getting Warren Brinson back helps because those guys had to take a lot of snaps. There's a kid, you know, he's talking about a young guy, Joseph Jonah Ajanye, the kid from Texas last year. He just turned 18, and he's playing D-tackle. He's playing DN at Georgia. 6'5 kid from Nigeria, 6'5, like 295.
When did he start playing football?
I'll tell you what, man. It's a grown-ass man, young kid. So that's a kid that's really played some against Kentucky. He's coming on. But, Mike, going back to some of the things we talked about with Ryan Williams. Ryan Williams is a five-star, one of the smoothest, most effortless kids I've ever seen at a camp. Like, I was like, who is this guy running by everybody? And made it look easy.
Right.
Well, I mean, if you're Georgia, Malachi Starks, he was a five-star, projected first-rounder. K.J. Bolden, he's a five-star, going to be a first-rounder. I mean, this is what type of matchup it is. Like, you got to be able to run with these dudes. There's going to be dudes all over the field. I think the biggest thing for Georgia is being able to get Jalen Milroe to the ground because he bounces off so many people to turn a three-yard gain into 6 and 7.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. My last question for you on this game, and I know there are other games that Bo's scratching and clawing over here. Can they protect Carson Beck without Tate Ratledge?
We're going to find out. I mean, that's
I had the same answer yesterday when I was asked that question.
There's so many questions. You just don't know. Yeah. This is one of those things Monday that Georgia is going to know this about their team. Alabama's going to know this about their team. Listen, Georgia lost a lot in the receiver game, though you don't sugarcoat that. Lad McConkey's gone. Brock Bowers is gone. Marcus Rosenby, Jack Saint is gone. Alabama, Terry Arnold is gone. Caleb Downs is gone. Kool-Aid McKinstry is gone. So there's questions. How good is Alabama's secondary, and how good is Georgia's wide receiver corps? We're going to find that out. We're also going to find out if Georgia's offensive line had a one-out game where they didn't play well and they came back and play well, or they have struggles this weekend, because Alabama's front and their front seven, to me, is still elite there.
Well, it's interesting how both teams have their struggles. South Florida, Alabama, Georgia had their little struggle with Kentucky.
It wasn't a little struggle.
It was a massive
struggle.
There
was some fingernails going in the fourth quarter.
It wasn't a little struggle in South Florida either. Yeah. I was at that game, man. It was a six-point game with about 5 minutes left.
I was surprised watching that game. I forgot how late that was with that game, but it's a different type of offense. Stresses you out. There's no telling what they had to face with that.
Is Brett Bielema about to get his second road upset in a row? Because they're at Happy Valley this weekend, and Illinois is all of a sudden got a pulse.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you look at the Nebraska game, and that was a crushing loss for Nebraska. And it was so bad that the Nebraska AD wrote the conference letters that we don't play on Friday night anymore. I don't know what that had to do with it, but Illinois is one of those sneaky teams. I'm not going to say I'm the expert, but there's people that think that Penn State is really sneaky good, like really sneaky good. We're kind of going to find out about them a little bit this week, because we know Illinois is going to be a good opponent. How good are they? I don't know, but there's some people that think Penn State's sneaky good.
I think this playoff was made for them.
I got two running backs. I'm telling you now. I watched Singleton in person in practice. That dude can go.
I can't let you get out of here without asking you about the situation in Auburn. And I'm not – listen, if you're an Auburn fan, listen, I'm just not a Bama guy or Georgia guy taking shots at Auburn. That seems to me like a situation that has gone south quickly.
I don't know why Hugh Freeze continues to put blame on players. And I'm telling you right now, I think Hugh Freeze is a hell of a play caller. I think this guy can win. But at some point, you got to say, you know what? I'm protecting my kids. I've got to coach him up harder, and I got to put him in better situation. You can't walk into a press conference and go, I'm going to find somebody I can throw it because we got guys open. It's basically saying my scheme's working and my kid's not doing
it.
It's
not my problem.
Dude, you don't do that.
That's Coach 101.
You don't do that. And I'm telling you, any angle you can use to recruit against a school, don't think that mamas aren't hearing
that. That's what I was going to say. They've dominated the state of Alabama in recruiting this offseason. They've dominated it. But I'm going to tell you right now, there are guys that are sniffing around.
And you got to hold on.
Yes.
You got to hold on.
Yeah.
He's also disrespecting other coaches. Walking in a press conference and saying, well, or whatever it was, his coach's show, whatever it was. Well, yeah, all due respect, nine out of 10 times we'd beat them. Well, hell, you didn't beat them the one time you had to play.
He said, I love Sam, but.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's kind of like y'all were talking about earlier about, well, they play hard. You know what I mean?
Don't hire coaches with personality disorders who are diagnosable. Yeah, that's all I have to say about that.
I tell you what,
somebody posted the picture, Rob, of him in the hospital room when he was at
Liberty. Yeah, the Liberty. Hey, he plays hard. I was an effort guy. You know what I mean? That's not good in high school. You ever see Rusty Mansell play? Man, he was a hell of an effort, man.
I tried to find – you tweeted a picture of me. I was like, I'm going to find Rusty in high school.
Oh, dude, it's rough. I'll send you one.
Rusty Mansell, bless his heart. That's what they said, right?
Bless his heart.
Bless his heart.
He gives it all he got, man. He gives it all he's got.
Thank you, brother. We appreciate you, man.
Oh, good stuff.
All right. Speaking of personality disorders, we got Grant McCauley coming up next.
We love you, Grant.
We love you, Granny. He knows that. We're going to talk about the turbulent waters of Major League Baseball as pertaining to this rain out with the Mets, what's going to happen, how the pitching's going to be organized with the Braves as the Royals come to town. Grant McCauley next on the Morning Shift, Sports Radio, 1990 Game. Hey, you can win tickets to Dega for the Sunday, October 6th race.
Dega, baby.
Let's do the fifth caller now, 404-726-0929.
His name is Grant. He's from okay.
let's go out to Grant McCauley.
Grant's going to Dega.
Grant, what's going on, brother? Good morning.
Well, just quite the eventful final weekend and maybe an extra day of the season, as it turns out.
What's the pitching lineup going to look like? What's Nick going to do? How's he going to navigate these waters?
That's going to be an interesting question. You know, just getting through the weekend, which is going to be important because it could also inform how Monday's doubleheader goes or doesn't go in full. I haven't gotten to work on my Venn diagram yet on what has to happen this weekend
right.
for the Diamondbacks, for the Mets, and for the Braves to decide, you know, the final two playoff spots, because the Padres are there. They weren't able to beat the Dodgers yesterday, but they still have a chance at the National League West, so that's got to be decided. But those two teams are kind of on an island by themselves. Or maybe they're on the mainland and the other teams are on the island. I don't really know. But they've got to figure out what to do with Chris Sale so that they can have him, you know, used at his maximum level or maximum need that they have, and then go with Max Fried and Charlie Morton, I think, because you want to win this Royals series as best you can and set up strong starting pitching there. So that's one thing. Spencer Schwellenbach obviously is off the table until the doubleheader on Monday. And then you just have to kind of sort out, where does Ronaldo Lopez fit in all of this? Is it a Lopez tries to give you four or five, then you have Grant Holmes ready in case that can't happen, and you use the bullpen the rest of the way? Do you utilize one of the starting pitchers that I'm sure is still hanging around from AAA Gwinnett, whose season ended last week, in case you need them and you've kept them going because that's just kind of the backup plan? But do you want to be talking about backup plans when you're trying to get into the postseason? Probably not. So this weather has created a incredible and unprecedented series of events, the likes of which even somebody like me who feels like I can look at the standings and typically figure out what needs to happen pretty easily, I'm doing a lot of math, and I don't know that that's my strong suit right now.
Grant, you brought up the possibility of a bullpen game, and I was kind of making the argument earlier that I know that this throws the starting pitching and all the probables and everything in kind of a tailspin. I would say the more affected group might even actually be the bullpen. When you look at taxing a group with that many games and that many days in high-leverage situations, a guy like Raisel Iglesias, who's been called on a number of times this year to pitch multiple innings in a game, I would say you might even be taxing the bullpen more than you are the starting pitchers based on the series of events you're going to be in over the weekend and into next week.
Yeah, it definitely could. I mean, and that's the big thing about, can your starting pitchers deliver over the course of the weekend so that Monday you can be a little bit more liberal with the bullpen, but also knowing that you immediately have to go into a wild card series right after that if you get through all of these things in order to get there. But that's kind of the argument or kind of what they're playing for right now. And I know Brian Snitker said, hey, look, you know, coming into the Mets series, we're already looking at this. It's like the playoffs are starting this week with the final two series plus whatever happens after that. But at some point, you know, with no off days, you have to figure out who's available and what those workloads are to be realistic about it. But I do think Ronaldo Lopez is kind of the wild card in all of this. But the fact that he's been down for a couple of weeks, he did throw a bullpen on Tuesday, felt good, and I think that he's lined up to come back and help them. But how much can you realistically ask from him, I think, is that big question. So, again, if you can get some innings out of him, like a good chunk of innings to start the game and make it more manageable, then I guess you could use what I would call kind of a, not a full bullpen game, but a little bit along those lines. But then again, and none of this stuff is perfect. None of these scenarios are ideal. Do you really want to be in a win-or-go-home scenario where you're having to throw a bullpen game? Probably not. Mm.
Grant, it was an awesome atmosphere. What I guess it was Tuesday night at the Truist. But talk about Ozzie Albee's return and just what it means to the lineup, because I know it's easy to knock how the lineup looked without him, but it looks just so much deeper with Ozzie because of how you can move people around in the order.
Yeah, I mean, it means a lot to them in the lineup, but I think it meant as much or more just to have him back out there from a continuity standpoint of just how much he's been a part, ingrained in what the Braves do and when they're successful. And the fact is, they needed somebody, I feel like, to walk through that door maybe to provide a little bit of that boost. And also for what he does on the field. You know, I feel for a guy like Whit Merrifield, who decided to play through a broken foot just to get them to the point where maybe Ozzie Albies does come back and he's kind of the odd man out in this scenario. But you also can understand it from the, you know, big picture sense. This was a guy that they very much wanted to get back. I was a little surprised that he jumped into the two spot of the order. I don't know that that's the final spot for him. I mean, the Braves shuffled their lineup at times, even in the 2021 postseason, all the way down to Game 6 in the World Series. So wherever he hits, just the fact that he's in there, I think, is valuable. But now you've got Michael Harris on a serious tear. Jorge Soler's been swinging the bat well. Marcell Ozuna seems to be kind of back to his normal, you know, antics for the season, or his normal accomplishments, I should say. And then you've got Matt Olson also swinging the bat extremely well for a number of weeks. So you throw Ozzie Albies into that mix, that's a pretty good group that you feel like can generate some runs scored. And even Ramon Laureano has been one of the Braves' better hitters and more productive hitters over the last month plus since he's basically taken over left field.
All right, Grant, got a two-parter for you. Number one, how much are the Dodgers going to pay Max Fried? And number two, of all the retreads, who's been the most pleasant surprise?
Number one, I don't know that it'll necessarily be the Dodgers, because they spent an awful lot of money last season on two starting pitchers, one of whom has never thrown a pitch for him yet. So who knows? Actually, three starting pitchers, because Tyler Glasnow goes on that list. And I don't know. In terms of retreads, what are we talking about here? What's the criteria?
Who's been the most impactful? I say Laureano's been a bit of a revelation.
It's a good one.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, obviously, you've gotten some good stuff from Gio Urshela, I feel like, especially defensively. He's starting to swing the bat a little bit better here lately. And I mentioned Whit Merrifield. I mean, there was a period of time where you needed somebody to step in and give you something at second base, and he's the guy that did that. So everybody kind of plays a part to get through the dog days of summer. And when you're a team that's been through as much injury as the Braves have, you're definitely thankful that you've had not one but a handful of guys that have come in and been able to bridge those particular gaps.
Grant, it almost brought a tear to my eye. We saw a situation on Tuesday night where Ozzy hits a ball to the right side of the infield, I think gets a run home. You know, some situational hitting that we just haven't seen at times this year, right? We've kind of brought it up. It's not really small ball. It's just, you know, you rely so much, especially last year, on the long ball, and then you get these injuries, and it's kind of like you have to change your identity. But listen, I think with guys like Michael Harris and Ozzy Albies back, you can start to lean more into your identity a little bit more. I guess my question is, with so many high-leverage games on the horizon this weekend, do you think situational hitting is going to play an important part in you know, how this regular season pans out?
Yeah, no, I think you can kind of live and die on that. Inside of certain situations in the game, we've seen that, hey, if you don't cash in here, you may not get another opportunity. Yeah. And that, I feel like, has been kind of what's hurt the Braves, because they're hitting their home runs, but they're not necessarily coming in those spots, and they're not necessarily coming with a bunch of guys on base just in general. So that's been something that, you know, we're a long way from 2023 as far as this offense is concerned, but they still have talent in this lineup that you look at and you feel like, all right, well, man, this group can't get a little bit more going. I know there's no Ronald Acuna Jr. I know there's no Austin Riley, and you can't do anything about those things now. But this is a group, especially, again, 1-5, 1-6 in the order, that should be able to do a little bit more. But I don't expect them to change their identity insofar as, you know, they're just going to start bunting and hit and run and start running wild. I mean, you got Michael Harris can steal some bases. I think Ozzy could pick his spots, you know, maybe Ramon Laureano. But other than that, yeah, this is not really a team that's just built with a lot of speed. But it doesn't mean that they can't do some small and fundamentally sound things like putting the ball in play at times in which you can't afford a strikeout. And just trying to get another run home, whether it's a sac fly, whether it's a grounder up the middle that finds its way through, whatever the case is, they've got to do the little things, because I do think that it means a lot more to them this year and their success than it did a year ago when they were just pummeling teams into submission, hitting 4-5 home runs and scoring 6, 7, 8 runs a night.
All right, Grant, go do your math.
Get it done. Venn diagram. It's a Venn diagram.
You're going to need algebra.
Looking
for this
forward
one,
to it.
One step at a time. Yeah. Geometric proof. Thank you, Grant.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a good morning.
All right, what's coming up in your little segment?
Rob, I got to tell you before we get to his tease, I brought this up yesterday. I asked him the question, who's the leading stolen base guy for the Atlanta Braves? Do you know who it is? This year, who's leading the Braves in stolen bases?
Travis or Arnold.
No, God, it's not that bad. That would be, he leads them with two.
Yeah. Ronald Acuna.
That's crazy.
I wanted to ask, like, I'm like, Grant, like, it, you know, you want them to play small ball. That's just not who they are, man. It's the whole thing with the hit and runs is something they just don't do.
Maybe you should start looking to maybe that could be another version of yourself. You have limited numbers of throws allowed
multiple
to first base and a bigger bag at second base, so maybe look into it.
There you go.
All right, what you got, brother?
Yeah, we got a retirement in the NBA and a documentary that might need to be fact-checked a lot on Netflix.
Oh, dear.
Uh-oh.
Next on the Morning Shift, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, and
the Odyssey app.
That's right.
Probably one of the best videos you'll ever see, this Herbie Hancock video with all the robots. Welcome back to the Morning Shift, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Jacob from Hampton, Ryan from Fairburn. Going to Dega.
Dega. Hell on Dega.
Dega, baby.
Yeah, we need to get we need to start doing more with
Atlanta Motor Speedway. Okay.
AMS.
This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com and get to packing. Of course, no Braves baseball tonight. Royals coming to town and at least one game on Monday against the Mets. We'll get back with Grant McCauley since he's doing the Venn diagrams to figure out the scenarios.
I got to tell you, Rob, you being in here on a Thursday has completely thrown me into a spiral. I literally almost looked
spiral.
At you. I almost looked at you and said, what are you doing this weekend, Rob?
Yeah.
Hey, no, got you tomorrow.
Let me ask you a trivia question. We had trivia last night. I haven't played trivia in years. And this is a trivia question. I was like the only one that, and I think in our table, that I was the first one on our table to say it, the answer, and was right. What's the only state
What? Just nobody that gives himself credit as much as Bo does. I was the first one to answer it. It was right.
Hey, let me tell you something. Abe Gordon beats me every time at that. Abe Gordon does have an answer for everything. Like, and, or they'll have a great feat. And I heard Duke Samoa talking this other day, and it was spot on, making me laugh in the truck. But, like, you'll say, can you believe so-and-so did this? And Abe's like, it's not that hard. All you got to do is these four things at a time, and you can get there. And it's, and I guess I'm that in a different extent. But what's the only state that borders like an ocean and has a great lake in it, and it also has a great lake located in the state? One of the great lakes.
It's got to be
New York,
Pennsylvania.
Final answers.
Yeah, what is it?
It's New York. Good job, Rob.
Thank you. Yeah.
Because they have what the lake
it's
that
a long state.
They have, well, we got to remember Buffalo is right across a great lake from Toronto.
That's right.
And then you have the, you know, the bay and everything out there. And so that's what I got. I was like, well, it's got to be New York. And they're like, no, are you sure? And I said, yeah, hell, I'm Squidbilly.
We're waiting on the beat to drop.
But wait, there's more.
Oh, okay.
We are not just brought to you by the W Sauce anymore. We're also brought to you by New Realm Brewing Company, the official craft beer partner for Kennesaw State Athletics. What? KSU, baby. New Realm. They got a craft beer just for the Owls. Hoo-da-hoo.
Did you tell them that you drink cranberry vodka mostly?
Yeah.
Didn't tell me? Okay. All right. Yeah, continue.
I drink a lot of beer, my friend.
Okay.
I just drink vodka at times, too, because, you know, sometimes you're drinking all day. I want to switch it up. Don't you worry about what Squidbilly drinks. All right?
We're talking about yourself in the third person.
You worry
get
about
to the
you.
Freaking story.
You worry about you.
Get to the story.
I have to sit here and play games of trivia. Get asked if it's fair or foul. Listen to your horrible top fives. You can hear me talk about my sponsors. Okay. I'm ready now, Robert Tribble. Mm. Derrick Rose has announced his retirement. Derrick Rose was a phenomenal.
What might have been had he stayed healthy?
Phenomenal college basketball player. Injuries got there. He had some comments. I think he wished he would have walked back at times, you know, about knees and everything and you know, how it affected his family life. And I think he regretted that. But he had one of the a really cool statement he told Chris Haynes from an NBA insider. He goes, look, basketball was and always will be my first love. As a teenager, I had a goal of becoming an NBA player, and I achieved that. This isn't a goodbye to the game I love. It's a thank you. He also went on to say that, you know, it's to some other guys in the business that he gave his all, and he feels confident in the decision, and it was just beginning. Now it's important. He gives all of his love to his family. They deserve that. I think Derrick Rose was a, you know, we saw him as a young player, and don't know if I really understood him, but, man, he grew into a hell of an adult.
It's crazy that, you know, some of these guys that are, you know, one and done college players, and some of these guys that go straight to the pros. You forget how young some of them become when it's all said and done. Like, they're 10 years into their NBA career, some of them, and they're 28 years old. You're like, Jesus, like, this guy's been around forever. He isn't even 30 yet. But he was definitely a guy that fit in that mold for me, man. But great player. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and I think it's cool to see guys that they're one and done players, and you don't. You know, you don't know what they are because they were there for a year, and then they're boom, and they're in the NBA, and they're making millions of dollars.
Where did he go to college? Was he at Memphis?
Memphis. Remember, yeah, that was
a national title game.
Yeah, that was the Memphis team that blew the they blew it at the end by missing all the free throws. And so it's kind of cool to see him. I don't want to say just mature, but just grow into a guy who really understood how not only gifted he was to be able to play basketball and how great of an athlete he was, but how lucky he was to be able to experience that and get as much time as he did in the league. The Mr. McMahon documentary is out. So this is Netflix. I think Bill Simmons did this documentary. It's on Netflix. And now apparently Vince McMahon tried to buy the documentary because I don't think it wanted it released. But it's one of these documentaries where basically it's kind of like fact-checking itself because you're going through things. There's interviews where they'll have one guy, a part of WWE, who is still a part of, like Bruce Pritchard went on there, and he's a big part of all these wrestling podcasts, and he talks about how reports of kind of sexual assault and misconduct is unsubstantiated, And then they have an interview. Then have an interview literally that plays right after it, and they say, "Why didn't you like so and so?" Yeah, they kind of touched me. They kept touching me, and I'm not going to use the exact phrase. And he goes, "Well, can you explain?" He says, "Well, yay.
You know, I was assaulted.
he grabbed me in my my jewels." And so it's just kind of it's basically going through and fact checking. I actually want to watch it because I think all of us. I don't know about you, Robin. I know Mike and I grew up as wrestling fans.
Oh, I did, yeah.
And we and especially during when I was growing up, it became like the heyday. The NWO, WCW. You had WWF Attitude Era with Stone Cold and DX and The Rock and all these guys. So it's gonna be interesting, but I think in all of this, probably at the end of the documentary, we'll just kind of come to the realization that we probably already know, which is Vince McMahon is not necessarily the nicest human being on earth, allegedly.
He's a flawed man, but most of us are.
All right, going to come back, hand it off to the steakhouse. Got Rusty and steak coming up top of the hour.
Can we just get steak out and we do it with Rusty and talk like Alabama, Georgia for 2 hours?
Right. It's the morning show, Sports Radio 929 again.